Taya from the Moonlight Mix.
And you're listening on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
You're listening to CJLO News. I'm Adam Innes. Canada Post workers are on strike nationally, but the closure of the historic NDG Post Depot is a specific point of anger for local mail carriers. Postal workers have been picketing at their workplaces across the country since November 15th for higher pay and stronger benefits. On the same day the strike began, the 89-year-old NDG Post Depot closed down. The closing of the depot is part of Canada Post's route restructuring. Before restructuring, mail carriers and NDG would start their day at this depot, sort the mail for their route, and head out, often on foot. Now, every mail carrier has been assigned a truck, and NDG mail centers have been moved to Snowdon and Bridge Street depots, where mail carriers go to pick up these trucks for their shift. Andreas Lamontis has been a mail carrier with a foot route in NDG for 17 years. He says the closing of the building is an end to a familiar way of life.
Well, I'm kind of losing my home for the last almost 20 years, so it's very sad to see it go. I don't see a point to removing this building from the city, from this area, because everybody in the community come here to get their mail, or you know, they know that the mail is going to be delivered in orderly fashion. Now they're making us go to big depots where there's, you know, it's more of like a schoolyard with 1,000 employees, and it's just like a big depot.
Lorraine Muller has been a mail carrier since 2017. The closing of the depot means her 8-minute walk to work at the beginning of her day is now a 45-minute bus ride. She says the closure jams up workflow.
You also have no time with your colleagues in the morning because we sort for 2 hours. We kind of joke around as we do it, and then we go out and we deliver for 6 hours. That's how it works. So it makes your day variable. So if it's minus 40 outside, at least you have a couple hours in the morning where you're, you know, you're warm and you're doing your job and you're preparing your mail the way you want to prepare it. And you know who your changes of address are and you know who your hold mail is. So you know your customers even better than just delivering to them. You know their needs, that, you know, what special services they have, which is something they're taking away. So now people are supposed to show up, load their truck and just go and deliver for 8 hours a day. How is that not gonna use people's bodies? I feel like it's gonna lead to more injuries. And the person who's sorting for 8 hours a day, it's gonna have repetitive stress.
A Canada Post Corporation spokesperson, Phil Rogers, said in a statement about closing the depot that motorizing the routes will help with efficiency and managing parcel volumes, and that the corporation will work with workers to adapt to the changes. The historic Post Depot on the corner of Sherbrooke and Wilson is quite distinct, with stone pillars and mid-20th century architecture style. The community landmark is not yet listed for sale. For CJLO and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back here to the Tommy John Show on CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well on a gorgeous but cold Monday November the 25th. Hope everyone is doing well. And if you're new to CGLO or new to the program, my name is Tommy Lane. And every Monday here on CGLO, we tackle everything going on in the world of sports. What a day. What a day. And what a week we had in, man, in football, in hockey, in basketball, college football, Formula One, the season wrapping up basically over the weekend. We had so much happening this weekend, and we have to get into all of it here over the next hour. So why don't we start off with a quick recap of the National Football League quickly. And it was started off with a snowy game in Cleveland, Ohio, between the Browns and the Steelers, and the Browns pulled off a huge upset, 24-19 over the Pittsburgh Steelers. We have to talk about that weather, though. It was 3.5, I think, the line for the Steelers. Everyone expected a close game, and then it was. And in that second half, with all the snow flurries coming down, I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be a hectic finish. And it was. A touchdown late by the Browns sealed it. Russell Wilson tried to get a Hail Mary at the end, but it wasn't good enough, as the Cleveland Browns moved to 3-8. The Steelers fall to 8-3, and that could be a costly loss for them. As you look at their schedule coming up, they have some brutal games on that schedule. They have obviously another duel with the Ravens coming up, but they have the Bengals, Philadelphia, Kansas City, and the Bengals again. So they got Cincinnati twice, Cleveland, the Eagles, Baltimore, and Kansas City. That is a brutal end of the season for the Steelers. So that game a few weeks ago against Baltimore was huge, but they would like to have that one back. That's a big, big loss for the Steelers and for the Browns. You know what? They always get up for those kind of games, divisional games. They beat the Ravens a few weeks earlier at home. They get the Steelers at home on a short week in a winter wonderland, and they take it 24-19. Another huge upset that was yesterday, the Tennessee Titans go on the road and stun the Houston Texans 32-27. A big, big day for Tony Pollard, 119 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Calvin Ridley, 5 catches, 93 yards, and a great performance from him. They improved to 3-8 as well. The Houston Texans fall to 7-5, and they're lucky that division isn't too good right now. Indianapolis is 5-7, our second, so they still have some wiggle room. But look at that schedule, they still have some tough games. They're at Kansas City, host Baltimore on Christmas, got Miami in a few weeks, who have won 3 in a row. So they got some tough games coming up. I mean, they should get out of the AFC South, but they're for sure that fourth seed. I don't see a world where they catch Buffalo, Kansas City, or the winner of the AFC North. I just don't see it. So it looks like a fourth seed for the Houston Texans, but you never know. You never know. But that's a disappointing loss. CJ Stroud, not his best game at all. So that could be worrying if you're a Texans fan. The Minnesota Vikings, man, they just keep on winning close games. That was another close one yesterday in Chicago, 30-27 in overtime. Sam Darnold was lethal. 330, 2 touchdowns, led him on that game-winning drive in overtime. Few big completions to TJ Hawkinson, who is playing great since coming back. He had 114 yards and 7 catches. But the big player was Jordan Addison. 8 catches, 162 yards, and a touchdown. Justin Jefferson only had 2 catches for 27 yards. Aaron Jones had a big game. He fumbled early but rebounded with 106 yards and a touchdown. That's very promising, though, from the Vikings. They say, oh, they're Justin Jefferson-oriented. Oh, my God, without Justin Jefferson. The Addison went off, Hawkinson went off, Aaron Jones went off, and they won the game. So that's promising for them. Caleb Williams, much better. 340, 2 touchdowns, no turnovers. He was their leading rusher as well. DJ Moore had a great game. Keenan Allen had a great game. Since firing Shane Waldron, they've done awesome on offense, considering they went like, what, 10 drive? I forget how many quarters it was without a touchdown. It was remarkable. They fire Shane Waldron, and Caleb Williams looks like the Heisman Trophy winner, Caleb Williams. But that's another bad loss for the Bears, a heartbreaking loss, I should say. They get the onside kick. They hit Keenan Allen down the seam, got in field goal range, made the kick, get the ball first in overtime, and they can't do anything with it. That's a tough loss. You think about recently the Hail Mary against Washington, the blocked field goal against the Packers, now this. Imagine if those bounces went their way. They could be in a playoff chase, but now the Bears are 4-7. Another huge upset. Dallas taking down the Commanders 34-26 in one of the craziest endings of a football game I've ever seen. You had the punt returner, Turpin, run back with a 99-yard touchdown. Then you have Jaden Daniels hitting Terry McLaurin for like a 90-yard touchdown. Maybe not 90, what, 80-something yard touchdown. To have the extra point missed. And then it was an onside kick return for a touchdown. It was absolutely crazy. But it results in the Cowboys improving the 4-7, 34-26. And they host the Giants Thursday, American Thanksgiving. They win that one. They're 5-7. And that last wild card spot might be coming into play. Not saying it's going to happen. They have some tough games. They have Cincinnati, I know. Philadelphia. But there's some winnable games on there. Carolina, the Giants. You never know. You never know. Cooper Rush played great. So we'll see. Never say never. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 37 against the Tommy DeVito Giants. The Giants are an absolute dumpster fire. They are in line for number one pick right now. Well, it's them and New England basically fighting for that first pick. Jacksonville, those three teams. A brutal loss for the Giants, 30-7. Detroit Lions keep on winning football games. They improve to 10-1 with a 24-6 win against the Indianapolis Colts. Jahmyr Gibbs, 90 yards. Two touchdowns. Montgomery with a touchdown. Did get nicked in that game. A little banged up, but should be okay for Thanksgiving against the Bears. Jameson Williams, 64 yards. Amara St. Brown, 62 yards. Tim Patrick, nice 55 yards. Everyone, they were just playing efficient football on the road. And that's all you can ask for. They're 10-1 right now. And cruising. But you got to be careful. That division's tough. Now you have the Vikings at 9-2, the Packers at 8-3. They had a big win, 38-10 against the 49ers. Against the Brock Purdy-less and Bosa-less 49ers, albeit. But still, that's a big, big win for the Packers. They stay within striking distance as well. Have a huge game with the Dolphins on Thursday night. And the Dolphins, 34-15. That was a bigger win than that. If it wasn't for a 4th-and-15 Drake May Hail Mary and a fumble, scoop, and score, it should have been 34-0. I'm dead serious. Could have been worse than that. Tua was great, 317, 4 touchdowns. Jalen Waddle was unguardable. He had 144 yards and a touchdown. The Patriots fall to 3-9. The Miami Dolphins, all of a sudden, from 2-6 to 5-6 and are absolutely within play for that, final wild card spot. Man, I can't believe it. A lot of them are writing them off. Oh, when Tua comes back, won't be the same. Tua's been awesome, crazy efficient, and they are right in play for that last wild card spot. The Kansas City Chiefs win a close one at Carolina, 30-27. The Panthers tied the game with a minute left, minute 40 left around, and even though they scored, got the 2-point conversion, I'm like, oh boy, that's a lot of time for Patrick Mahomes. He had a big scramble in the last drive. Gets him in the field goal range. 30-27. The Chiefs improved to 10-1. Mahomes, maybe his best game of the year stat-wise. 369, 3 touchdowns. He was great. Bryce Young looking much better. 263 and a touchdown for him. I think it's his highest passer rating of the year. So we wrote Bryce Young off when he got benched a few weeks back, but ever since then, he's played great. They were looking for 3 wins in a row. But to play to the 2-time defending champs like that, that's a big win. A big performance. Big win for the Chiefs, though, to keep that half game up on the Bills. The Denver Broncos and Bo Nix, they keep on winning 29-19 over the Las Vegas Raiders. They control the last wild card spot in the AFC at the minute. The Seattle Seahawks, 16-6 at home against the Arizona Cardinals. And now they lead the NFC West. 6-5. Arizona, 6-5, but the head-to-head, Seattle leads the Rams and the Niners, the two favorites heading into the year in that division, are both at 5-6. Speaking of the Rams, they had a huge game to get back into contention, and they hosted the Philadelphia Eagles. And it was close for a little bit, but then in that second half, it was the Saquon Barkley show. Yes, that would be an understatement. Saquon Barkley, listen to this stat line. And I don't even think it does it justice how great he was. 26 carries, 255 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Let me say that again. 255 yards rushing. 255. It is the franchise record, I believe, for the Philadelphia Eagles. Yes, that is the most ever by a Philadelphia Eagle, and I think I heard it was like 9th all time in a game or something. It's top 10 all time, I think. What a performance from Saquon Barkley. Not to mention, he caught 4 balls for 47 yards. He was averaging 9.8 yards a carry. So basically 10 yards a carry he was averaging. He had 2 huge runs. He had the one that started the second half, broke it for 70 yards. Then at the end of the game, they're up 2 scores, just trying to run the clock out, broke another one and blew the game open. He has been sensational for the Eagles. And with that performance, he's jumped into the MVP conversation. Pretty much a lock now to win Offensive Player of the Year. He's been that dominant for the Philadelphia Eagles. Man, what a game from Saquon Barkley. He already has 1,300 yards, over 1,300 yards. He could get to 2,000 easily. He could do it. If he keeps playing like this, he's going to fly past 2,000, but it's there. It's definitely a possibility. The Rams still had a decent effort. I think this is more about the Eagles than the Rams. Stafford, 243, 2 touchdowns. He got sacked a bunch, though. They could not protect him. Though McCarter and Williams, they were all over Matt Stafford. Puka Nacua had a big game. 9 catches, 117 for him. The Eagles, 9-2. The Rams fall to 5-6. Tonight we have a big one, the Battle of the Harbaugh Brothers. Baltimore in Los Angeles to take on the Chargers. That should be a great game as well. We head to the rink in the National Hockey League. The Toronto Maple Leafs, without Austin Matthews, 4 in a row. They have won 4 in a row and sit atop of the Atlantic, 3 points up on Florida. They had a big win yesterday at home against Utah. The first time the Nylander brothers played together, and that was pretty cool. But the Leafs are cruising. Craig Berube, he's done a great job implementing a certain style of play. And since Matthew's been injured, they've been on an absolute heater. They're 7-2-1 in their last 10. Arguably the hottest team in the NHL. Buffalo's on fire, too. That's another thing we got to hit on. The Buffalo Sabres, 3 in a row for the Sabres. 7-3 in their last 10. They are tied with the Bruins, who made a big coaching change since last time we were on the airwaves. Jim Montgomery out in Boston. Joe Sacco in. The Bruins have won 2 in a row. But Jim Montgomery, now the head coach of the St. Louis Blues, signing him to a 5-year deal Sunday morning. And they got a big game coming up against the Rangers tonight. I'll be tuning in to see how Montgomery does. And he's been with the Blues in the past. And I feel bad for, I'm forgetting the coach's name now in St. Louis, who just got fired. But, you know, if you get a coach like Jim Montgomery coming available, I don't know. They made the move, and they're trying to go all in, sign him to a 5-year deal. He wasn't going to do this 1-year deal, see what happens. No, he signs a big deal with St. Louis, and he knew it would happen. When Cassidy got fired, he got snatched up by Vegas right away. Montgomery gets fired, snatched up by the Blues right away. We'll just quickly walk through the rest of the standings. The Devils leading the Metropolitan Division on 30 points. Carolina and Washington right behind them as well. The New York Rangers have lost 2 in a row, and reports they're trying to make some key roster moves. Reports Chris Kreider and Trouba could be on the trade block. So let's see what happens there. But they're still one of the cup favorites for sure. They have Shesterkin, they have Panarin, Zibanejad, Lafreniere, they're loaded. But maybe they need a little change. They've brought back this group a bunch of times. Maybe they're looking to switch things up. But that was a report I saw this morning, so we'll see what happens. The Blues, like I mentioned, hired Jim Montgomery, looking to shoot up the Central Division, but it's going to be tough when you have Winnipeg and Minnesota playing the way they are. Both teams are tremendous. I know they both lost over the weekend, but they're on 34 and 30 points. Winnipeg on 34 points. The Wild on 30 points. They are two of the best teams in the league for sure. Dallas and Colorado are following them behind, but closely. Three in a row for Colorado, two in a row for Dallas. I know they're still 4 or 5 points behind, but they're playing great hockey. Remember that terrible start Colorado has gone off to? They're 7-3 in their last 10. They're back. They just had to get healthy. McKinnon and McCarr have been, like, I don't even know what you want to, just any, pick a word that defines greatness, and that's what they've been. They've been sensational, incredible. Can I say immaculate? They've been immaculate. I know McDavid, people say, oh, the best player in the world. Nathan McKinnon is not that far behind. He is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. I love watching him play. He skates with so much power and speed. It's all, that's the word. I just think of power. He's like a freight train. And I always think of that clip of a few years ago when Pietrangelo was mic'd up, I think, and it was like when they're playing at Lake Tahoe against Colorado, and he's like, oh, crap. Can't say the actual word he says when McKinnon's coming down on him. And that's what it feels like. He's just a freight train. If you're a defender, you have no chance when he's skating at full force coming at you. Just so fun to watch. And Colorado, I know that that's a slow start, but they're right back in it, fourth in the Central. Yet to the Pacific, it's Vegas who had a big win against Montreal over the weekend, 6-2. They lead the Pacific. Calgary on 27. The Kings on 25. The Oilers on 24 points. Formula One wrapped up this weekend, and Max Verstappen has won yet another Drivers' Championship. His fourth. He finished fifth in the race, but he just had to do better than Lando Norris, which he did, who finished sixth. George Russell gets the win. Lewis Hamilton second. Carlos Sainz for Ferrari finishes third. We still don't know who's won the constructors. We got two races left. We have Qatar and Abu Dhabi to see who will take home that prize. McLaren, and Red Bull, Ferrari all vying for that top prize. Quickly to the NBA, the Cleveland Cavaliers 17-1. Their only loss is to the Celtics, who are trying to catch up with them. They're 17-1. The Celtics are 14-3. It is those two in the East right now. Then there's everyone else. Then you got Orlando, New York, Miami, Milwaukee, all kind of clunked together. The Bucks have played great recently, though. Four in a row, they've turned the page for sure. They're one of the worst teams in the league, but Giannis is carrying that Bucks team. Maybe the biggest story, though, in the league is the Sixers. They are a dumpster fire. 3-13, and Embiid doesn't want to play. Paul George can't stay healthy. Maxey is out as well, in and out of the lineup. It's not a good, I feel bad for Nick Nurse. That is a disaster right now in Philadelphia. 3-13. Oh boy. Not a good scene at all. You head to the West, and we got two teams tied at the top, the Golden State Warriors and the Oklahoma City Thunder at 12-4 each. The Houston Rockets, really the surprise right now of the NBA season. They're third in the West at 12-6, followed by the Lakers at 10-6, and the red hot LA Clippers, who have won five in a row, who are at 11-7. Finally, college football. Man, we had so many damn upsets over the weekend. We had Indiana. I know it was an upset, but number five team in the country. They lose to Ohio State. That was a big one. Ole Miss losing at Florida. Their season's done. They got three losses. Alabama scores 3 points on the road in Norman, Oklahoma. Lose to the Sooners 24-3. Texas A&M in overtime. On the two-point conversions in overtime. A drop in the end zone to keep the overtime going. And Texas A&M loses. Everyone's losing. Not to mention Colorado loses to Kansas. BYU, number 14 team. They lose to Arizona State. Army 19. They fall to Notre Dame. Everyone was losing. Penn State won a squeaker against Minnesota. It is all coming down to the wire. Think about this. We don't know who's playing in the SEC championship game yet. We don't know who's playing in the Big 12 championship game yet. We know SMU's in the ACC championship game. We don't know if Miami's joining them. It's just, and then not to mention the teams that have to get in behind them. And I know we all said a 12-team playoff's better, and it is. But I don't know what 12 teams are going to pick now. With Indiana losing the way that they did, everyone's like, oh, now more SEC teams are going to make it. Alabama loses. Ole Miss loses. A&M loses. And we're like, what the hell? Crazy. We'll get into more of that in the rest of the show. But I'm just saying, this college football season is a gong show, an absolute gong show, and I have no idea what's going to happen. None. I have zero clue. I don't know who the best team is. I know Oregon's undefeated. I don't know if they're the best team. I don't know if Ohio State's the best team. I don't think Penn State's that good. Notre Dame's defense is really good. I don't like their offense. I have no idea who's going to win the national championship. It might be Georgia. It might be Georgia. Could be Indiana. Who knows? Indiana's getting in now. Everyone's like, oh, Indiana, they lose. They had no one on their schedule. Well, they can't take a three-loss SEC team, and if you wanted to, there's too many of them. What do you do if Texas loses to Texas A&M in College Station next weekend? What do you do then? Oh, my God. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. We're going to get into that, though. We have to get into a quick break, but when we come back, we have a whole bunch to talk about. We have to talk about the Eagles' huge win last night. And we briefly have to mention what happened in that Dallas and Washington football game. And if I'm concerned about Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. We're back after this quick word from our sponsors.
Discover a festival where documentary films and celebrations come together. Bold screenings followed by electrifying nights. Come and experience RIDM. It's happening in Montreal from November 20th to December 1st. Check out the complete program at RIDM.ca. The Montreal International Documentary Festival, RIDM. Where all stories meet.
Do you want to have a discussion about movies?
You talking to me?
And have the iconic sounds of cinema? Well, tune in to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds every Tuesday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 a.m. with your host, Remy.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once? I am one of those melodramatic fools, neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it. Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Am I just stuck?
Back here on the Tommy John Show. Man, what a performance by the Philadelphia Eagles last night. Now, I have said I've been worried on this show countless times this year. I'm worried about the Eagles. I know they're a good team, but I'm not a Nick Sirianni guy at all. He is not my kind of coach. I think he benefits from a tremendous roster that Howie Roseman built for him. And I'm not knocking what he's done. He's made it to a Super Bowl. They made it to the playoffs a few times with him. He's a better coach than I give him credit for, probably. But I just, like, you know what? I look at the coaches in the NFC. I think Matt LaFleur is better than him. McVay, Shanahan, Dan Campbell. I don't think these coaches are better than him. But now I'm starting to think, you know what? Maybe this team's so good offensively, and they've improved so much defensively with Vic Fangio as the defensive coordinator, that Nick Sirianni can't even screw it up. Like, I'm getting to that point. I still have Detroit as the best team in the NFL and the NFC. I know Kansas City has the accolades and Mahomes and Andy Reid. I understand that, but I feel like that's a different argument. But who's played the best? The team that's played the best is the Detroit Lions. No question about it. But Philadelphia is pretty darn close, and they are so talented. And the word I want to use for the Eagles, for the Lions, I'll use dominant. For the Eagles, I'll use balanced. The Eagles are just balanced everywhere you look. They have a great offensive line. I know Jason Kelsey's not at center anymore, but still, the O-line's good. Mailata had some problems with Verse, the rookie, who's going to be a star in this league, no question, for the Rams. They have a great offensive line, Philadelphia. They got good tight ends. Goddard is awesome. They got an elite number one receiver in A.J. Brown. They got maybe the best number two receiver, or arguably, in Devontae Smith. Jalen Hurts, is he as good as people says? Personally, I don't think so. I think he's solid. I wouldn't put him in a top five list, anywhere near it. But he's an above-average NFL quarterback. He uses his legs. He's not the best thrower, but he's above average, for sure, as a thrower in the National Football League. So he's a starting NFL quarterback, for sure. But in years past, they've had decent running backs. They've had DeAndre Swift. They've had other good running backs. You know, remember Jay Ajayi on that Super Bowl run? Try to remember, they still had Gainwell. They had other good running backs. But they've never had a Saquon Barkley back there, ever. Ever. And we'll get into Saquon, but I also have to give credit to that defense. Last year, that secondary could not do anything. Remember, the Eagles were 10-1 last year. Beat the Chiefs on Monday Night Football in a Super Bowl rematch. They were ready to roll. And then they played the Niners on that infamous Sunday. And the Niners said, oh, we didn't have a quarterback AFC Championship game. And the Eagles were like, oh, yeah, approve. A lot of trash talking. And the Niners went into Philadelphia and ran all over the Eagles. And that was kind of the end of the Eagles season. That loss just killed them. I think it was like 42-19 or something like that. And it dropped the Eagles to 10-2. And it was after that, they were not the same football team. Not the same football team at all. Remember, they lost to Dallas, lost to Seattle. Like, Drew Locke on Monday Night Football beat them. And they lost to Kyler Murray and the Cardinals at home. Then lost to the Giants late. And then they get blown out by the Buccaneers in that wildcard game. And that was their season. They were 10-1 and finished the year 11-6, losing wildcard game. And that was mostly because their defense was getting torched. Absolutely torched. And to Howie Roseman's credit, in the offseason, he made it the number one priority, the secondary. Our front seven's good. We think Carter's going to blossom. Davis will bring in all these other players. We still have Brandon Graham there. Williams, we still got good pass rushers. Our problems, our secondary stinks. So what do they do? How about we address it in the draft? And no one's hit really at a rate like Howie Roseman. It's crazy. Go, you know what? Let's go draft all these corners. Let's draft the Mitchell kid from Toledo. Let's draft Cooper DeJean in the second round. First two picks on corners. We should be okay. Well, they're hitting all right. Both of these players are studs. Maybe they're not elite yet, but in a few years, they could have one of the best tandems in the league. This Mitchell kid, he's awesome. He's all over my screen. And Cooper DeJean makes plays. And now, their weakness is almost a strength. And yes, Matt Stafford and Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp, they're going to get theirs, and they had their numbers, but they didn't really score. And yes, the Kyron Williams fumble early on, I understand that, but the defense played well. And it was getting, the Rams were moving the ball on them early. But into the second quarter and into the second half, that defense locked up. They got home. And yes, the pass rush got to Stafford, but that had a lot to do with that secondary, making it hard for Matt Stafford to find an open receiver. It really was. So credit to the Eagles, Howie Roseman, for building a great secondary. That was the weakness. They were getting flame last year. Baker Mayfield looked like Tom Brady. Pick another, looked like John Elway. Otto Graham, Johnny Unitas, whatever quarterback you want to say. That's what Baker Mayfield looked like in that NFC wildcard game last year against the Eagles defense. And that's what Kyler Murray looked like on that game at the end of last year. In Philadelphia, at the Link, is what they call it in Philly, I think. Liberty, whatever, the Link, Lincoln Financial. And they say, you know what? We're not no more. We're not going to have a brutal secondary. And when we play an elite quarterback come playoff time, we're not going to get shredded. And it might not be enough to win them the Super Bowl this year or get to the Super Bowl this year. But the Eagles have their corners for a little bit. The next 3 to 4 years on these rookie deals, they're going to have a lot of chances because their front is fantastic. The secondary is going to be very, very good. And let's get to it. They have Saquon Barkley for another 3 years. Another 2 years after this. Two. Saquon Barkley was nothing short of incredible last night. Incredible. Pick whatever word, like we said with McKinnon and McCarr, you want to use for Saquon Barkley last night. That would be appropriate. He was so good. So shifty, so explosive, just incredible, incredible. I mean, he had 255 yards. Are you kidding me? 255? 255 yards. Ugh. So, Tommy, I mean, they've had good running backs before. Not like this. And what a player like Saquon Barkley will do for Jalen Hurts in that pass game will open things up. It will. And you could say Saquon is on a very good team, which he is. And he never had a quarterback like Jalen Hurts or have had weapons on the outside that keeps defenses honest like A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith wasn't there yesterday. No. It was A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert, Jahan Dotson caught one pass, but it was the Saquon Barkley show, ladies and gentlemen. It was the Saquon Barkley show, and I was rooting for the Rams. I'm not a huge Eagles guy, still a little bit sour grapes when Nick Foles beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. I'm not a huge Eagles guy. I respect them. I think they're a well-run organization. Howie Roseman may be the best GM in the league. But let's be honest, I was not cheering for the Eagles at all. I was like, let's go Rams. Come on, Matt Stafford. Let's make things interesting. But I the second half, I just was laughing. Applauding. Almost bowing down to Saquon Barkley. That's how good he was in the second half. This was the first play of the second half. Touchback, ball in their own 30, start of the third quarter. Oh, boy.
It's the Eagles beginning at their own 30 with Saquon Barkley as the running back. And you said it, Chris. Big opening. Barkley let loose. Saquon will take it the distance. Touchdown. Terrific blocking up front. And Barkley goes 70 to extend the lead.
The adjustment was they were going to bring Michael Hoyt up and do a five-man line. We're going to stop Saquon with a five-man line. And on the very first play, led by Landon Dickerson's block, it was gone. Watch Dickerson come out here onto this second level and just get rid of Hoyt and then plant Omar Spates, and Saquon did the rest.
So that was the first play. The first play. And yes, there was a great block on the play, but he hit as soon as he saw open grass, he was gone. It was one plant and gone. That was the first play. And yes, the Rams hung in the game. They scored after that. It was still, they were still always around. But the Eagles made timely stops. They force him to kick a field goal late in the game. And then, of course, the kicker misses the field goal like all kickers are doing now. Ask Washington Commanders fans. Ask Bears fans about missed field goals. It's an alarming rate right now. But the defense held strong. And these young corners played well. And that pass rush is great. And Jalen Carter, even though he didn't get a sack yesterday, he's just getting double-teamed all the time. This is the player they thought they were getting when they drafted him in the top 10. This is the player who was the number one player on everyone's draft board a few years ago if he didn't have the legal issues. This is who Jalen Carter was supposed to be coming out of Georgia. And yes, it's taken a while. Rookie year, he was good, but wasn't as advertised. Now he is fully one of the best pass rushers, interior linemen in the game. There's no way around it. He is that good. And yes, the Eagles are going to make the playoffs. And yes, they haven't had maybe the limelight like the Lions and the Packers, other teams have had this year. I feel like we're not really talking about the Eagles. But I have to say, they are right there. And I'd still take Detroit, because Detroit can stop the run. And that secondary, which I say is very good, they haven't played the Lions yet. They haven't. And that front seven is good, but they haven't faced an O-line like the Lions yet. And I just think the matchup fits both teams decently well, but better for the Lions. They will make Jalen Hurts beat them. If you're going to win Philly, it's going to be because of Jalen Hurts. If the Lions can't run the ball, I think they're comfortable with Jared Goff dropping back, throwing to St. Brown, throwing to Williams, throwing to Patrick, throwing to LaPorta, dumping it off to Gibbs. They got so many options. And I think the Lions, I trust Jared Goff more right now, just dropping back and throwing to times 40 times a game more than I do Jalen Hurts. That's just a fact. That is just a fact. So one 70-yard run, right, would be enough. Right? One, you know, you have one 70-yard game. That's a lot of fantasy points. How about two? 3 minutes left in the game. They just need to run the clock out. You know what? Smart play call. Just give it to Saquon Barkley.
A 6 yard shy of a career high for rushing yards. And he's got it. And he's got four. And he's going to go all the way. What a night. What a season. What a player.
Saquon Barkley, man. He was unconscious yesterday. Unbelievable. And this is something they haven't had. And I'm quickly going to segue to this, because all great teams, and I've been saying this forever now, all the great teams have an identity. Think about it. The Lions have an identity. They want to run the ball down your throat with an elite offensive line and two running backs who are completely different with Gibbs and Montgomery. What do the Chiefs want to do? They want to play good defense. And the new age post Tyreek Hill is give the ball to Pacheco or Kareem Hunt, run the ball, and then when we need a big play, we got Mahomes. The identity is run the ball, play defense. If we need a big play, we got Mahomes, we got Kelsey. That's their identity. What is the identity of the Buffalo Bills with Joe Brady? They are a run-first team. People forget, when the Bills lost when the Bills went on that run the end of last year, remember when they lost that game in Philly, everyone thought they were done. They went on the run post-bye, make the playoffs, number two seed, and arguably could have won that game against Kansas City in the playoffs. When they went on that run, people, if they didn't watch the games, people were like, oh my God, Stephon Diggs must have went for like 150 yards a game. Stephon Diggs was not really featured in the offense that much. It was running the ball with Cook, relying, getting the run game going, and getting the play action going. But the Bills were a run-first team. Now the Bills want to run the ball with Cook and the rookie Davis kid from Kentucky. That's what they want to do. And if that doesn't work, okay, we'll use Josh Allen. But they're a run-first team, and they want to use play action. When the Baltimore Ravens are deadliest, it's when they run the ball with Derrick Henry and RPO with Lamar Jackson. What gets the Ravens into trouble is when they drop Lamar Jackson back 40-something times a game and he's forced to throw every single down. And he's a better thrower than people give credit for, but that's not their identity. the Eagles' identity, and if they get away from this, which I fear Nick Sirianni teams might, they fall in love with their quarterback and drop him back. No. If the Eagles have to be a run-first football team. Same with Houston. Same with Green Bay. Pick a team. They have to be a run-first team. Look at all the great teams now. We used to be the high-flying offenses. We are shifting more towards running the football first, establishing the run play action. The league goes back and forth all the time. Think about where the Chiefs started at when Mahomes' first few years. It was 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, Tyreek Hill, 40 points a game. Now they're run the ball with Hunt and Pacheco. And then we'll use Kelsey, we'll use Gray, the tight end, and we'll win low-scoring games. And if you don't believe me, look at the box score of all the Chiefs games. How many are low-scoring one-possession games? All of them. Yesterday, maybe an anomaly, 30-27 against the Panthers. But most of them, it's around 20 points per side. Play good defense, run the ball. Buffalo, run the ball. They love to run the ball now in Buffalo. Love to. And now they're 9-2. When Houston has success, it's when Joe Mixon is running the hell out of the rock. He couldn't do it yesterday. Look how CJ Stroud looked. Not as good when you have to drop back 40, 50 times a game. Okay, end of a game, you need to catch up. All right, throw the ball more. But when you come out of the gate just throwing the ball, it's a recipe for disaster. Think Detroit, run first team. Kansas City, right now, run first team. Buffalo, run first team. Eagles, run first team. Baltimore, run first team. And when you think of the games these teams lost, they got pass happy. Absolutely pass happy. And look at Baltimore in the AFC Championship game last year. And look at Baltimore this year when they lose games. And look at Houston when they lose games this year, and look at the one time Detroit lost this year. Look at it. They go away from the run. They try throwing the ball more, they're more likely for turnovers, and they lose games. So that is why I'm saying this. This is a public service announcement to any NFL execs, coaches listening. Run the ball. And that's why if I was a GM of an NFL team, I would build from the line out. Build in the trenches, be able to get after quarterbacks and be able to keep your quarterback upright and be able to have running lanes. If you can run the ball, everything works off that. You can play action. They'll probably try and stack the box on defenses. You get more favorable matchups on the outside. It's what I'm saying is not that hard and not that complex. And you look at all the good teams right now. Kansas City's 10-1, Detroit's 10-1, Buffalo's 9-2. And look at Cincinnati. Joe Burrow's throwing for a million yards. Ja'Marr Chase has a million yards, a million touchdowns. They're 4-7. 4-7. Look at the Chargers this year. Herbert's been awesome. You know why? Because he has a run game and a better offensive line now. All the pressure's off him. They are a better football team. It ain't that hard. When the Texans have played well this year, it's when Joe Mixon was their best player and their most utilized player. This isn't hard. And credit to the Eagles. Last year, they got away from the run game in Swift. They signed Saquon Barkley to be their star back, and they are giving him the ball 25, 30 times a game because he's their best player, and look what's happening. Now, A.J. Brown, Dallas Goedert, Devontae Smith, they all get matchups on the outside. Everyone's happy. The offense is rolling. The reason I'm bringing this up is the team that goes away from this formula come playoff time is the team that will lose and won't make the Super Bowl. So that's why I still like Kansas City. I still like Detroit. Because those teams, God bless them, have an identity and they stick to it. They absolutely stick to it. Tommy, they have Mahomes. Tommy, they have Josh Allen. Tommy, they have all. They have. I understand that. But there's a reason why that when the Bills made the move to Joe Brady and they went to more of a run-oriented offense to take some of the pressure off Josh Allen, just a little bit, they turned into a much better football team. And that's why when Stephon Diggs leaves, there is no drop-off and actually the offense looks better. Oh my God, can you believe that? Maybe because it works, and this way of thinking works. And yes, you have to have some sort of a fancy run scheme. I'm not saying run it up the middle 10 times, but have like a good run scheme, good offensive line, so you can bully teams. And when it gets cold in Philadelphia, and when it gets cold in Buffalo, and when it will get cold in Kansas City, Missouri, what's probably going to work better? The Miami Dolphins, the pick your poison of a high-flying throwing team. How'd that work for the Dolphins last year in that AFC wildcard game in Kansas City? Or is it the hard nose, running the ball 30, 40 times a game, playing good defense, the better strategy? It's just a thought, just an observation. I just happened to notice this. I can't help but notice that all the best teams run the ball really well. And credit the Eagles. I didn't think Nick Sirianni would do it. Because last year, Nick Sirianni almost got fired by taking the ball out of Swift's hands and taking the ball out of Gainwell's hands and letting Jalen Hurts be the man. And that didn't work for them. He was turning the ball over a lot last year, and we noticed the drop-off from that Super Bowl team. When they got Jalen Hurts happy, they went from 10-1 to 11-6. They went, 1-5 the last six? Disaster. And when the Eagles have looked bad this year, I don't know, week one in Brazil, well, the Jalen Hurts drops back and throws the ball a bunch. And credit them. They realize, you know what? We gave Saquon Barkley like all this money. Maybe we should use him more. And the last 7-8 weeks or so, they've used them. And now he's pretty much a shoo-in, the offensive player of the year. And now you have a more balanced offense. I'll give credit when credit's due. I am not an Eagles guy. But if they stick to this formula, running the ball behind that great offensive line and using that, bootlegging Hurts out and doing smart play action, they'll be very, very tough to beat. Vic Fangio doing great job on defense. And if you ask me right now, as we sit here on November the 25th, there is no way around it to say that the Eagles are a number one threat to the Lions. I know the Vikings are good. I know the Packers are good. People try to talk me to Atlanta. I like Atlanta. Don't love Atlanta. Washington's a cute story. But the number one team, the number one threat, I don't want to hear it, to the Lions. It's not San Francisco. Injuries have killed them. It's not anyone in the West. Not anyone in the South. Not Minnesota. Not Green Bay. It is the Philadelphia Eagles. That's just my quick thought. Quick ad, we'll come back. We'll talk about the crazy weekend in college football in those last 3 minutes of Washington and Dallas. I'm Tommy for the Tommy John Show. Back after these quick words from our sponsors.
M for Montreal is back. From November 20th to 23rd, come check out the festival that highlights the best new music in the city. There's something for everyone, with concerts varying in all sorts of musical styles. Make sure to check out their jam-packed marathon events, such as BP Club and En Stereo at Theatre Fairmount, Grand Public, Radiant Baby, and Wizard at Casa del Popolo, Bonnie Trash, Breeze, and Dermabrasion at La Sauterrenia, plus performances and DJ sets from Shay Lia, Lara, Virginie B, La Force, Claire Vincent, and more. For more information and to buy tickets, visit mpulmontreal.com. dust off your boots, pour some sweet tea, and tune in to the freshest of folk, roots, indie, and more, along with some favorites of the past. The best of old and new meet together in The Alley every Friday at 11 a.m. only on CJLO 1690 AM.
Back on the Tommy John Show. Big news, Kristaps Porzingis to make his season debut for the Celtics. That's big. That as a Celtics fan, I mean, it really only starts in the playoffs for me. I know that sounds cocky, but we knew the Celtics would be in the playoffs. I've known that since, well, last year, the year before that. I know the Celtics for the next few years are going to be a playoff team. Too much talent, but that's big. Adding Porzingis makes them even more lethal. So I'm allowed to be cocky. It's my one Boston sports team that's playing well. The Bruins are firing their coach. The Red Sox had a disappointing year. The Patriots are a dumpster fire. It's only Drake May. Let me brag about the Celtics. I deserve that. I know that's no one that's going to have sympathy for me as a Bruin, as a Boston sports fan, but still. And also, it was disappointing for Raiders fans having Minshew break his collarbone. Now they have Desmond Ridder, who may be the worst quarterback I've ever seen. So that's going to be... They're looking at that number one pick, too. Forgot to mention them earlier. And Shedeur Sanders might be a Raider. And who knows? Maybe Deion Sanders becomes the head coach of the Raiders. Friends with Tom Brady. Who's a part owner. I don't know. We'll see. Man, that college football weekend was crazy. And I quickly just want to say... I'm announcing now, and I've been pretty good on my college football predictions. I said Florida State would go 2-10 this year. They play Florida this weekend, who just beat Ole Miss. Florida's going to beat them by 50, and they're going to go 2-10. So I was on to that, but I have to quickly say, I don't know who's going to win. This is true. In years past, I knew Michigan was the best team last year. It was them or Georgia. Georgia lost in the SEC championship to Bama. I'm like, okay, well, Michigan's going to win the national championship. Last few years before that, I'm like, Georgia is clearly the best team, and they've won. This year, I have no darn clue who the best team is, and I think that's the best for college football. We have no idea who's good. We have an idea. We think Oregon's good. They're 11-0. We think they're good. Because they beat Ohio State and then played no one else. But we think they're good. We think Ohio State's good because they beat an overrated Indiana team and then lost at Oregon. We think they're good because they spent a bunch of money on the roster. But we don't know. We think Notre Dame's good now, but they lost to Northern Illinois 2 months ago. We think Penn State's good, but they're squeaking out wins against USC and Minnesota, then lose when they play one good team in Ohio State. We think an SEC team's good, but we don't know. We really don't know. We don't know if Texas is that good. We think Georgia's good, but Georgia keep losing when we don't expect them, when we expect them not to. So it's really an absolute mess in college football. And I am announcing officially, I don't know who's going to win the national championship game. I said Georgia beginning of the year when they smoked Clemson. Then I'm like, you know what? It might be Texas. And then since then, I don't know. Texas lost to Georgia. Georgia loses to Alabama and Ole Miss. But then they beat Tennessee, so I don't even know what the hell is going to happen. As a Notre Dame fan, we have a chance, which I like. In years past, we made the playoff. We were going to be Clemson or Alabama's punching bag. This year, we might have a chance. I'm proudly announcing Notre Dame has a chance at the national championship. They really do. You're going to host a playoff game against a team that's not that good. Then if you draw an ACC champ or maybe Boise State or the Big 12 champ in the next round, if you're the 5 seed, or a 6 seed, and then you're in the Final Four, and anything can happen. So I'm announcing, I don't know who's going to win the national championship. That's my big thing on college football. Can't wait for next weekend, all the rivalries, Michigan, Ohio State, Auburn, Alabama, Texas A&M, Texas, Notre Dame, USC. We have so many good games next weekend. I can't wait. I just want to quickly say, we have 30 seconds here, that Washington-Dallas closing was the craziest 3 minutes of football ever. And I wish I could talk about it more, but we spent so much time on the Eagles. But that was crazy, and that's what the NFL is all about. The twists, the turns, the everything. And that's why we live in the NFL. Punt returns for kickoff returns for touchdown, onside kick return for touchdown, 80-yard Hail Marys, mixed extra points. Nothing beats it. There's not, truly nothing like the NFL. Thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Monday where we'll wrap up that weekend in college football and the National Football League. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Love you all, and I'll speak to you guys next Monday.
You're listening to CJ.